You know, in Israel, by the way, hummus is a traditional part of foreplay for some people. It's like, you know, rappers eating sushi off of naked women. We do the same thing with tahina.
Hello, Jews and other folks. This is Unorthodox, a weekly podcast from Tablet Magazine. I'm Mark Oppenheimer, joined as ever by Tablet Deputy Editor Stephanie Butnick.
Hi.
And senior writer Leah Leibovitz.
Ahlan wa sahlan.
You know, I move between the Leibovitz and the Leibovitz because you've said it both ways. And I wonder if we could get a ruling on that, Liel.
It's an affectation either way, because back home it would be the Leibovitz. But for some reason that can't really hold, so I'm deracinated.
What does Annie do?
Annie, I think, is Leibovitz, right? No, she's Leibovitz.
She has a V. She spells like you, I think.
But now that we're here, like, Liel or Lyle, like Liel, like people have a lot of questions about your first name. My dad calls
what does
you
it mean
Lyle.
Again?
Like, why do I have that name?
My God, right?
It means I have a God. My father wanted to name me Lee after Lee Marvin, who's the greatest American actor of all time. And my mother wanted to name me Eliyahu after some rabbi grandfather. And so, you know, they either did too much drugs or not enough drugs, and they combined the two. Together.
But we're going to anglicize it to Leah Leibovitz to
Lyle Leibovitz.
To Lyle Lee, L-E-I-G-H. You'll be like director Mike Lee, who's probably a Jew. Lyle Lee. Our Jewish guest this week is National Football League Jew Jeff Schwartz. And our Gentile of the week is etiquette expert Patricia Fitzpatrick. So Lyle Lee and Stephanie Butnick, what's new? Have you had a good week?
Yeah, I had a great week.
Yeah, what was the highlight?
The highlight actually hasn't happened yet, but it will happen between this recording and it airing, which is that I'm going to see Hamilton finally.
We should note a musical, which Stephanie has somehow avoided.
I've avoided
all. She's not heard a single song.
I'm going in cold, and I think
I actually
it's really
have to
amazing.
Confess, I don't think I have either. I couldn't recognize a Hamilton song.
Who are
song
you
if
people?
I heard one.
What is life like? How sad is it?
Lonely.
Right.
Have you seen Hamilton, Liel?
No, but I could sing every word to every song because, you know. Just by osmosis.
I don't know. I want it to be pure my first time.
It's a very virginal. I don't want to spoil it for you, but you know how it ends, right?
There's a duel,
this
right?
This is fabulous. Yeah, this is fabulous because you're going to see Hamilton, and you know what I saw this week? I saw Sully with Tom Hanks as Captain Chesley Sullenberger.
Did you see it Sunday? Because my parents also saw it Sunday.
I think I saw it.
And of course, the perennial question,
did you pay
for your ticket?
No, I bet you used another one of those coupons.
Can I tell you something? I did. I used one of the coupons, the last free coupon I got for when Inside Out, In and Out, Inside Out? What was that
Inside
kid's
out.
Movie? Inside Out. For when Inside Out, when the projector wasn't working and they gave us 10 free coupons.
Okay, technically some of those coupons were for your children, right?
Yeah.
But you're using them
yourself. That's another ethical question. Is Mark depriving his children of entertainment and education?
So I decided, Sid and our daughter Ellie were having a mommy-daughter baked potato and movie night, so I had to leave the house. So I called my friend Liam, not a Jew, and I said, let's go to the
Liam.
Movies. And
Liam.
All that was out was Sully. And, I mean, Tom Hanks as yet another hero. It's like all he does. And the movie's atrocious. But, like, pretty soon we're going to be, you know, Tom Hanks is the heroic tractor driver who, you know, saves
Look,
the scarecrow.
He can do everything.
Could you imagine the pressure on that guy? He must, like, you know, strangle prostitutes on his time off just to blow off steam. Could you imagine?
Wait, Tom Hanks or Chesley Sullenberger?
You're Tom Hanks. You walk down the street and everyone's like, oh, my God, you're exactly the savior
so
I've been waiting for.
Who's the bigger hero, Sully or Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks. And meanwhile,
I don't know, Sully actually did something.
Stephanie, you might not remember this.
It took 23 seconds. I mean, Tom Hanks
made
big.
Tom Hanks was the star of Bosom Buddies.
Yes.
And
Splash.
And then he had that great five-episode arc as Ned, Elise Keaton's drunk brother on Family Ties. Like,
correct.
He used to be a big clown. And I guess it was with Philadelphia that he became a hero.
An actor.
I think it just shows how, like, easy it is for, like, you know, a white male actor to just, like, grow into these really, really, like, amazing roles. As he ages. And it only gets easier and easier for him to clinch these hero roles.
The patriarchy.
It's because white male actors don't faint from pneumonia and fall on their Secret Service guys.
Ooh. Mark is getting political.
I'm going so
Isn't
political.
It amazing that basically the criteria for becoming president of the United States are currently now, can you stand up straight for half a day? If the answer is yes, you could be president.
You
it's
win.
Amazing.
Ding, ding, ding.
So that's news of the Methodist with pneumonia. Now let's have a little bit of news of the Jews. We bid farewell this week to Greta Friedman, the 92-year-old Austrian Jew who claimed to be the nurse being kissed in that famous Eisenstadt photo of a sailor kissing a woman in Times Square after the news of Japan's surrender in World War II. Yet the claim is surrounded by controversy. 11 men have claimed to be the sailor, and 3 different women have claimed to be the nurse. So it could be that Greta Friedman is just a big liar and not actually the subject of a famous photograph. What's more, contemporary viewers of the photograph have often noted that a picture of a man grabbing an unsuspecting woman and forcing her to be deep tongue-kissed by him is actually not, like, maybe that's not a super heroic act.
Like,
maybe
it used to be so romantic, and now we're like, wait a second. She doesn't know him. She was just standing there. She didn't ask to be in this picture.
I don't know that in 1945 it was any less rapey than it is right now.
And, you know, look, to be fair, there was some bar not far from Times Square where some man grabbed some man and tongued him right after the news of Japan's surrender.
But where's that picture?
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks as the soldier who grabbed the woman. Why that movie is going to be made, and when it is, it will be made with Tom Hanks. According to a story on Glenn Beck's website, which was then weirdly taken down, not the website, but the story, Mel Gibson recently told him that the Jews stole his movie The Passion of the Christ, as if we would ever want it. According to Beck, Gibson said to him, quote, "And then some Jewish people, I guess rabbis or something, I didn't get into it, somebody stole a copy of the movie before it was shown to anybody. And then they did a deal with the New York Times with all these rabbis trashing him," that's Gibson, "as an anti-Semite." And Gibson said, "I couldn't believe it. Nobody was really upset that these guys stole the movie." So apparently, he thinks the reason Jews were mad about the movie is because we were whipped into a frenzy by a bunch of rabbis who'd stolen a copy of it.
I mean, first we kill Christ. And then we steal the movie about Christ? That's just when poor will matters. It end? When will it end?
When will it ever
end? Enough with this violence.
Do you kind of feel, though, that, you know, Mel Gibson, did he open the door a little bit for the whole Trump phenomenon? I mean, I feel like when I was growing up, any whiff of anti-Semitism in public culture got you kind of banished for a while. I feel that the opprobrium was so strong. And now we have this guy who gets to keep making movies, even though he's a total Jew hater. And now we have a presidential candidate who hires a guy to be his campaign manager who once said that he didn't want to send his daughters to school with a bunch of whiny Jews.
If this show is any indication, like, we're pretty whiny. I think Mel Gibson sort of didn't open the door to Trump, but he was one of the first public figures, at least in my memory, because I remember like the last 5 years since I was 12. To sort of to have it be like, oh, crazy Mel, like he's an anti-Semite. Like, what'll he say next? And sort of the more things that happened where he was just sort of saying just absurd things to anyone, like even when he called that cops, you know, like he's
right.
You're saying even when he called the cop?
I'm not going to say what he called her because I think it was offensive. But
I think you should
but
say
he just sort of became crazy uncle in a way that like we've sort of let him slide in a way like, oh, he's just wild and like, I mean, he's definitely bad and, you know, obviously not as bad as his dad. But like we've just sort of let him slide a little bit like, oh, what'll he say next? What'll he do next? And it's like we do the same thing with Trump. Like, oh, you know, he's just riling.
He's just crazy. Yeah. It's become the crazy uncle excuse.
In Mel's
which is,
defense, you know, one of these men is a paid entertainer. Who is paid a lot to look crazy on film throughout a
Donald
very
Trump?
Long career of looking crazy on film. And the other is Mel Gibson. No, you know, that's what we love Mel Gibson for doing. So when Mel Gibson behaves like Mel Gibson, we're like, oh, look at him.
But he really has such little commercial viability now, I think. I mean, he's now trying to promote like a World War II film that I think is actually getting good reviews. And so like,
is Tom Hanks in it?
Probably he should be. I get that this was like an off the record conversation. This wasn't supposed to be published, but like he's still sort of like harping on this Jew thing. And I think he could like needs to take a break on it. Like that's,
he
we're still talking
material.
About Passion of the Christ again. Like we're still talking about Mel Gibson, the anti-Semite.
I think he generally believes it.
But
he needs to move on to the homos and the Muslims. Enough with the Jews exactly. Already. Mel Gibson.
Can I but just say, that, I know this is not popular, but I really freaking love that guy.
Why?
Mel Gibson?
Because he is the classic embodiment. I'm actually happy that he turned out to be this raging anti-Semitic asshole. Because to me, that just brings the sort of, you know, level of depravity of his art to this kind of classic. It's just a distillation of it.
It's like he's so real. It's like his craziness, method acting.
That's
goes
exactly.
So deep.
Like he went too far. He like went through, he went around the swing. Like
he embodied the process.
Right. He crossed over to the other side. You want your anti-Semites to be 200 proof crazy,
I do.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah. I want everything to be 200 proof.
It is true. There is something. I mean, I prefer him to the weird kind of like Trump hangers-on who are like, no, we love the Jews. We didn't mean to retweet it.
There's that kind of the, you know, the shiftiness. John Foster Dulles, like, oh, no, we're just, you know, we do not take kindly to the Hebrew persuasion. Like, if you're going to hate me, just, you know, call me a ridiculous name. Make
sugar
a movie
tits.
About how sugar tits. Stephanie said it first.
But I said it to Leo.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Like,
that's
he's taking it back. You call them in further.
Sugar tits.
You know, call me sugar tits. And
so wait, Mel Gibson gave us sugar tits, and our listeners have given us shit waffle and douche canoe. I mean, it just gets, it's like real Gibson territory, isn't it? This is what he nailed down.
And that is why I will always love him.
Speaking of high Anglophone, classy anti-Semitism, let's move to England. Here's a great story. In a 2014 speech at the United Nations, Emma Watson or Hermione Granger, maybe it's Hermione Granger playing Emma Watson. I can't remember which of them's the person and which
How,
is the
You really
character.
Think Hermione Granger might be the person and
yes.
not the
no,
Harry
no.
Potter character?
In Mark's
I actually
defense,
in my defense.
British names can be so fucked up. Yes, why yeah. not? Can you say like,
yeah, totally.
Oh, Hermione Granger, professor at Cambridge There's College the... of Agriculture, of course.
There's the great biographer, I think it's of Virginia Woolf and others named Hermione Lee, who teaches it all. They name people shit like that in England.
I know, but when your alternative is Emma Watson, you're like,
I don't know. Anyway, so in 2014,
which
Hermione
is the muggle?
Hermione Watson gave a speech at the United Nations in which she quoted the line, "If not me, who? If not now, when?" Now, every Jew who's ever taken one mediocre adult ed class at the JCC knows that that quotation is from Hillel the Elder, from the Mishnaic text Pirkei Avot, Chapters of the Fathers. Now, last week, Ivanka Trump, Jewess Ivanka Trump, posted the quotation to her Instagram account, and she credited not Hillel, but Emma Watson, which means that forevermore in Google, there are going to be seniors writing term papers where at the beginning they put the little quotation, little like epigraph, if not me, who, if not now, when, dash, Emma Watson. Like Hillel will be he'll be on page 8 before you know it's from Hillel.
Let me tell you, I think Ivanka Trump got her conversion at Trump University.
Leo, you've had some interesting mail lately. And I'm going to read one of the letters that we got, okay?
Go ahead.
Dear Mark, Stephanie, Leo, and the rest of the Unorthodox podcast peeps, I don't normally write letters to podcast hosts, but after listening to the episode Teach Your Children Well, I had to write in. I had to respond to listener Emily, who wrote to ask Liel to stop talking or mansplaining or whatever. I love you all, but I have to say I love Liel the most. I love Israel, I love Israelis, and Liel is one giant hot Israeli. Sorry.
This is very true.
Dana voice. While I admit that I do lean in the same direction as him with regard to politics and Israel, I find myself agreeing, laughing, and being influenced by the things Liel says. I love it when he busts into Arabic or Hebrew, and when he uses that Israeli accent, oy, my knees go weak. I could listen to him read a cookbook in that accent all day long. So please, Liel, keep on talking, joking, and sharing all the thoughts in your lovely mind. Please, please, please keep up the phenomenal podcasts. I'm going to keep on using my Harry's razor just in case Liel and the rest of you ever make it to Chicago for a show. Best Dana in Chicago. I just got to say, first of all, we've been wondering. I know people have been wondering, can women
it's
use Harry's razors?
Hot in here.
And the answer is yes, they can. Liel, she thinks you could read a cookbook and it would be hot.
In my Israeli accent. Dana, this one's for you. You take 2 cups of well-drained chickpeas. You mash them slowly with your fingers. You pour in luscious, sensuous 1/2 cup of tahina with some oil, 1/4 cup extra virgin olive oil, some peeled garlic that you mash and mash and mash. You squeeze the lemon. You mix all together until you get the best hummus in the world.
I feel profoundly uncomfortable.
Now, my question
that
is...
That was deeply erotic.
I really want what? Hummus, though, right now.
I do, too. You know, in Israel, by the way, hummus is a traditional part of foreplay for some people.
Like how? Do I want to know?
Soccer players... this is completely true. This is a thing, or at least was when I grew up. They would sort of smother it on the naked bodies of their girlfriends and then lick it off, which is the most revolting fucking thing you could do to another human being.
I feel like that was in that like Zohan movie.
The Zohan is a documentary, basically. It's a complete accurate description of life.
Upcoming live shows, people, this week, September 19th, we will be at the Jewish Community Center of New Haven with Colin McEnroe and Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman. We'll be debuting a new song in honor of Lieutenant Governors. For tickets, go to jewishnewhaven.org/events. We have upcoming shows in Boston, Toronto, and West Palm. I was going to get there. The Boston show will be featuring former Jew Congressman Barney Frank. It's going to be amazing. If you thought he was indiscreet when he was in office, wait until
just
we get him
wait until he reads you out his hummus recipe in an erotic New England right. voice.
And Stephanie, what have I yet to pimp?
Canuga. He still hasn't happened. We'll be hearing about it until it does. Someone
Canuga
better
is
go.
Like, is like Mark's Neverland. It's not a real place.
It's like Nirvana.
It's just in his imagination. You go to Canuga and everyone's
tell us when
there.
It is, Mark. I want to start my countdown.
Movies October's. Don't cost money. And
you drink one gin and tonic and go to bed.
And everyone's
it's October
happy.
16th through 18th at Canuga Conference Center. I will be at the Lansing Lee Conference with other people talking about religion and politics. It's a scenic, it's an idyll by the lake in the mountains of North Carolina. Who wouldn't want to go to Canuga?
You guys, I have great news about our New Haven show.
What's that?
I think Elise B is going to be there. My mother.
Oh my God.
And Ben Cohen. My fan club.
Wait a second. My mother might be there.
What?
I feel very left out right now.
How soon can your mom fly in?
Could some listener come and be my mother for the night?
Have a mom, she might be the bomb, but ain't nobody got a mom like mine. Her love's till the end, she's my best friend. Ain't nobody got a mom like mine. She's my world, she's my heart, and there's no denying I'm her girl. No matter what, even when I'm lying, she loving me, loving me, loving me, loving me, love.
All right. Special Jewish guest this week, the National Football League's own Jeff Schwartz. He is a professional football player who's played for the Giants, along with his brother Mitch Schwartz, who is now an offensive tackle for the Chiefs. Is that right?
Yes.
And you are between teams, am I right?
I am between teams, yes.
So is that a euphemism? Is that like a nice way of saying...
I'm unemployed. it's a nice way to say I'm unemployed, yes.
Okay, so before we go any further, we're going to do a test. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Oh, say, can you see? He didn't stand. He didn't stand. This is Kaepernick territory.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't stand either, do you?
No, I do stand.
You do
all
stand?
All the time, yes.
Let's just get this out of the way. Colin, thumbs up, thumbs down?
I think it's redundant to say he has the right to do that. But if he wants to use his platform for how he sees fit, you know, he should be allowed to do that. I don't really have an opinion on whether or not he's right or wrong, but, you know, we have these great platforms. We're able to do things with our brand and stuff. And if that's the way he wants to do it, then, you know, more power to him.
Like, do you know him, by the way?
No.
No. But like, if you met him, you'd still shake his hand. You'd give him the bro shake. You'd be cool.
I try to stay out of social issues that I'm not fully 100% involved in. What guys do off the field doesn't really bother me as long as they're ready to play on Sundays. We will talk about it from time to time, but you know, it can get pretty fiery if we get in those subjects in the locker room, just like any workplace, I would assume. Now, I like to talk a lot. We do talk politics. A couple of us kind of do it together.
That's a little discussion group.
Yeah, that's about it. But I love discussion. I love talking about issues. I love discourse. I think we've lost some of that in our society now with social media. There's like you either on one side or the other side. You can't be in the middle. You know, you either like what Colin Kaepernick did or you don't. You can't just be in the middle and say, I like this, I like that, I like certain parts of it, I don't. And that's a problem, but we can get that another time.
So we're here to talk about a lot of things. One of them is your book. You and your brother have a book coming out. It's called Eat My Schwartz, Our Story of NFL Football, Food, Family, and Faith. That's a nice, it's a Spaceballs reference.
It is, yes.
Are you a Mel Brooks fan? Are you a Spaceballs fan?
I have seen that. I did not see it, though, until college. My college roommate was like, have you seen Spaceballs? And I said no, and he was very upset with me. So we watched it right away.
Too much time practicing, enough time watching
exactly, yes.
old movies. So what's the book about?
So we're the first Jewish brothers in the NFL since 1923. So that's pretty impressive, obviously.
Have there been other Jews in the meantime?
Yeah, there's Jews.
Like, who's the Jewish Sandy? Who's the NFL Sandy Koufax?
No one really.
No, like, we've never had a really good player.
That would be you, Jeff.
It would be me. I play on Yom Kippur. That's the difference. I don't think there's been like a Sandy Koufax to the NFL.
You name three Jewish NFL players but since the last brothers to play and the current brothers of which you're one?
Well, so at a time I was training with Gabe Creamy. He played a couple of years. He's Jewish. I played with Sage Rosenfels, who's sort of Jewish.
Sounds Jewish.
He's not though, really.
He's got a Jewish last name.
Taylor Mays. He was at USC. He plays. He might still be around the NFL.
There's a Jewish player named Taylor Mays.
Yeah,
that's wow.
Jay Fiedler.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, Ali Marpet just got drafted 2 years ago as offensive lineman for Tampa Bay.
But like in the history of the NFL, one would struggle across time to make a minion. Like it is really.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. We can't make a minion now.
Your brother is a couple years younger, right?
Yes.
He's also a couple pounds lighter.
Yes.
What was growing up like for that poor guy? did he even get to eat at dinner, or
my parents. One joke we like to say about why we're so big because my mom's 5'10" maybe a little shorter. My dad's 6'1", so they're not like huge individuals. But we got this industrial freezer in my garage, like a huge, huge freezer. And my parents ordered meat and poultry and fish. we didn't go out and buy that every day, you know, or every week. It was ordered. And so we get 6 months at a time of food. My brother.
They were just looking for a bargain. They wanted a good deal, right?
My brother, of course. My brother and I would go through that in 2 months. 6 months worth of food in 2 months. So we never had a shortage of food in our household. My brother, though, he was always like considerably smaller than me growing up. And then he just kind of caught up at certain points. So yeah, I beat him a lot in like sports. We never physically fought, but I beat him in sports a lot. He just was smaller than me. Then eventually he caught up and now look at him.
Were there any other siblings?
No, just us. My dad jokes that if he would have known, he would have had three more offensive linemen and made himself a whole offensive line.
But I notice, according to your stats, you're 6'5", 320.
That's Mitch.
Oh, that's Mitch. What are you?
I'm 6'6", 340.
Okay, so now Liel, before he started dropping weight in training for the marathon, was, Liel, you were what, 6'5", 350?
6'5", 357.
357. You topped out at 357.
Yeah.
So what in an NFL lineup, where do you put a 6'5", 357 guy?
How well
who's very know. Angry, I should say. Like, very really angry. Genuinely maybe, angry.
Can you move? Could you have a little lateral quickness to you?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you can play offensive line. They probably would want you like at 340, 330, though. to be fair, we're going to be honest about
it. And what are you now? You're 6'5".
That's two trips to the freezer right there, but I could do it.
Yeah.
What are you down to, like 240?
I'm down to about 240.
That's extremely impressive.
Yeah. Every week we sit here, he's good for just you. Shrinking.
Yeah, but his NFL prospects have just shriveled to nothing.
And his anger has elevated.
But my anger has. Jeff, so I have a question. What's the difference emotionally playing football versus playing basketball or baseball? Do you feel different?
Oh, yeah. Before you play a football game, more so than the NFL, like you have to put your mind in a place that's nothing like any other sport because you know you're about to be in a physical combat. I mean, you're violence for 3 hours. So you have to get your mind in a place that's accepting that's going to happen versus other sports. You don't have to do that, right? So I went to a World Series baseball game. I got to go on the field for batting practice. And these guys were just loose, like having fun. You know, they're not about to go physically beat each other. So there's a mindset. And everyone does it differently.
How do you do it?
I have a routine. I go out there, I warm up on my own, come back in. We warm up as a team. I come back, you know, we come back in. And then I try not to get too jacked up about the game until I actually step on the field because I found when I was younger, I get really excited and I get tired earlier. So I just stay calm. I laugh. I joke around. And then as soon as like we go on the field to run the field, it's like, it's go time.
Okay. Question for you. So when you go into like a Yom Kippur service and you know you've got like a few hours ahead of you, how do you psych yourself up for that?
for that, you just do it. I don't know. There's another way to – I fasted a couple years ago. I was injured, so I was able to do it. And the last 3 hours were tough.
Were you hangry?
They're a beast.
Do you know the worst part about that time is when you finish the service like 30 minutes early, you have to sit there and wait for the shofar to blow.
Yes.
And you're like the rabbi's just like, you're just chilling and you're waiting for the sun to go down. And you're sitting there like, why didn't you just finish? Or
why didn't
or
the cantor stretch it out
or,
a little bit
or
longer?
Or two, or they wait, like they leave the last 5 minutes, like they stop, they're done 30 minutes early. Then they leave the last, but then they realize they've like left parts out and they speed up and and then it's over sunset. You're sitting there like, dude, it's 30 minutes past sunset. Can we go
like,
eat?
I got bagels waiting for me.
I should be three
pounds
of lox in.
Do people hate sitting behind you in temple?
I never asked them. I'd assume so.
They're not going to tell him.
I've never had the conversation.
You mentioned earlier that you do play on Yom Kippur. Yes. Was that, now, of course, there is the great Jewish sports legend about how Sandy Koufax wouldn't pitch on Yom Kippur in the World Series. Was that something that people were expecting of you? Was there a hope that, like, the Schwartz brothers will, you know?
Will they Koufax, won't they?
Right. Will they Koufax, yeah.
There's a little difference between Koufax and us. Koufax, best player on the Dodgers, best player in baseball. He can get away with missing a game. He also pitched three more games at World Series. So he didn't, like, lose a start necessarily. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, he would have pitched three games anyway, so he still pitched three games. But obviously, he did what he thought was right. I only have 16 games a season, and I only play for a certain amount of years, and it's hard for me to miss a game for Yom Kippur.
Well, it's interesting. I think your dad says in the book that he set sort of an impossible standard for athletes.
The Koufax did.
Yeah, Koufax did.
Yeah, of course.
He looms large and he expects this.
And it's hard to live up to that, but I'm okay with my decision. I have no regrets that I play in Yom Kippur.
How many more years do you think you have in you if you get picked up by a team? How long's...
This will be nine and 10. I'll be done.
Okay.
I'm 30 now. You start feeling different.
So in about 2 years, you're gonna retire and get really religious. You're going to make up for all of that.
Your beard is going to grow.
Oh, I had a great beard. This is obviously not a visual podcast. I had a great beard. I mean, it's trimmed up now. I can show you a photo. Like, I grew it for like months.
But now you're on
awesome.
TV. You gotta look sharp. Good.
Now, Jeff, your marital status. I see a ring on your finger.
Yes.
Married.
Two kids. Yes.
Jewish girl.
No, but our kids are being raised Jewish.
You're being raised Jewish, and your brother's still looking?
No, he's engaged.
He's engaged.
Yes.
And so, like, are there expectations from the Jewish community? Do you ever feel them, like, if the Jewish football players don't have Jewish kids, like, what hope is there for the people? Like, Hitler won. If the Schwartz brothers don't produce little Jews.
I've never been really asked that. My son's two. He's been going to the JCC preschool for a year now.
His name is Chaim.
No, it's not. So Judaism is a part of our lives. My wife enjoys Judaism. I've taken her to, obviously, the high holidays and other things, and she enjoys it. So we are raising our
Which
kids
is more
Jewish.
Than everyone else, because no one actually enjoys it.
Yeah.
That's right. I love, by the way, if your son wants to rebel against the family tradition, he will go and become like a lawyer or a doctor to upset dad and uncle.
Yeah.
It's great.
So what about within the NFL from all of the overwhelmingly Gentile teammates? Like, how do they view Judaism? I mean, is there misunderstandings there? Is there anti-Semitism? Is there reverence? Like, oh man, you're from like the chosen people. Like, what's the feeling?
Definitely not that.
I've written about how Christian the NFL is. Like, I've done journalism on, like, there's so much athletes in action and Bible study, and it's like a pretty Jesus-y place.
It is, and it's okay with me. Some teammates don't care. Some teammates tell me I'm the first Jew that they've met. I'm sure that's not true, but maybe the first Jew who, like, talks about being Jewish. So I have teammates that are curious. They ask me questions. We talk about it. We're very closely related to other religions. Obviously the Messiah thing is a little different, but
that's the deal breaker. Yeah.
We're the OGs. Like, we invented this stuff.
Exactly. That's... So most guys are pretty cool about it. And yes, the Lord's Prayer and is said before and after games. Or I've never really had an issue with it. I don't. I take a knee. Bow my head. I don't have to, repeat it or say it.
Is there so much religion in the NFL? Like, do they really think God, like, wants, do they think God is invested in the outcome of Lions Browns?
That's one difference, I think, in Judaism is we don't really live that way. Like, we don't, obviously God is around us, but we're not, our daily decisions are not influenced by the
higher power.
Right.
We don't think he's interceding in daily affairs.
And some guys believe that.
Yeah.
So maybe they believe that, I mean, obviously, like, we're saying a prayer in our locker room. The same prayer is being said in other locker rooms. So, obviously. But I'll tell you what, though. Here's the thing, though. Like I told you about getting to, like, a place where you have to play the game. If that's what it takes for a guy to play in the NFL and play that game, then good for him.
Especially if he's on your team.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So I've never had a problem with it. I've had some guys make in college, it's in the book, some guys make some comments that weren't appropriate. I don't think they realize. Like, a kid made a joke about Jews burning in the oven. I kind of had to tell him, like, we don't talk,
like,
about,
dude, no.
We don't do that.
That's actually not cool.
Yeah. We don't do that. So that's really about it. It's not been bad. By the way, there's more Jewish owners than players. I had a trainer tell me that almost every day. He's like, Schwartz, you should be owning the team, not playing for it.
Your plan for retirement? Is that what you're going
to
do?
I was just going to ask. Football players seem to they become coaches, commentators, or they own beer distributorships. Which is your path? Or are you going to
commentator, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It'd be great.
It's very hard to get into it. I'm working on it now. I have an agent for that. I have two agents, one for football, one for entertainment. Or broadcasting. So it's just
well,
it's hard
we would
to
love
in.
You for the Super Bowl to come and do an unorthodox live rendering of watching the game and explaining things to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, we'll have you back.
We can do that.
You can be.
You guys go to the Super Bowl. I'll be there in Houston.
Can you hook us up?
What do you mean?
Can I don't you get go, us some I tickets. I mean, we'll be there if you can get us tickets. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're not free.
Okay. So, final question. All the Jewish mothers out there, our podcast is overwhelming. Like, most Jewish mothers in America listen to this podcast.
I'm sure they do.
I mean, actually, we're at about 70% of Jewish mothers. Some of them have sons who are now like, I want to be Jeff or Mitch Schwartz when I grow up, mom. And the mom's like, no, I read in the New York Times that'll give you concussions. And what do you, as a intellectually adept, you've still got your marbles, you've probably concussed.
You think I do.
We think you do. How many times have you been concussed?
Never.
Never. So what's the message out there? Like, what is the takeaway?
Couple things.
So they let their kids play?
I personally don't worry about CT that much because I'm playing. I'm in the game. I know my wife does, and obviously my mom does. I think that it is, you can get CT from playing, obviously. I think it's been proven.
CT is
that's what they call.
Like concussive trauma or something.
I don't know the name
whatever
of it.
Whatever it is.
But that's what they call the injury from getting your head beaten, essentially.
Right.
I think that. In general, there's more stories about guys excelling after football than there are about CTE, but that's obviously been a big subject and there needs to be some sort of thing done about that. But there's a lot of guys that succeed after football and that maybe should be highlighted a little bit more, and I hope to be one of those guys. But see, you never know. My job has afforded my family a good life, so that's kind of the trade-off. You know, I mean, I've had six surgeries in the NFL. My body's a little beat up, so I mean, that's a trade-off. The trade-off is that my family is going to be set up.
All right. Well, we're going to interview you in 40 years, and we hope you're as articulate as you are today.
Yeah, I could do that. Stephanie, I'm good. Right.
Jeff Schwartz is one half of the Fighting Schwartz brothers, the first Jewish brother pair to play in the NFL in about a century. There was another pair, right?
1923.
Who were they? The Kaplan brothers.
If you read the book, you
the
know.
The Goldfarb brothers.
They were like they had changed their name from Horwitz to something else.
If you read the book, you'll know.
Okay. So if you want to find out who the first fighting Jewish NFL brothers were before it was the NFL, you have to buy their book, Eat My Schwartz, Our Story of NFL Football, Food, Family, and Faith, on sale at Amazon, bricks and mortar stores, and the concession stands at a stadium near you. Our Gentile of the week is Patricia Fitzpatrick. Patricia, or should I say Ms. Fitzpatrick? I will say Ms. Fitzpatrick, is the founder and president of the Etiquette School of New York. She's certified in etiquette and international protocol and in adult and corporate etiquette by the Protocol School of Washington. She's worked for Estee Lauder and Bergdorf Goodman. She is quite simply one of our city's go-to people when there are questions of etiquette, manners, and so forth. Patricia, thank you for joining us.
You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Before we even begin, I'm sorry, Mark, to interrupt. I just have to ask a question about certification. What's the etiquette board like?
Oh, the people who certified me, they're the most prestigious etiquette certifying organization really in the world. One of the few to have the credentials certified for an etiquette school. They work with people literally all over the globe.
Are they like so hardcore that if you like, you know, fail to raise your pinky while drinking tea, they would just kick you out of the club?
Oh, actually, if you raised your pinky, they would kick you out of the club because that is a faux pas.
See, shows you how much I know. We need your help.
But what's the test like? I want to know what the test is like. I mean, when you go for your final certification, what do you have to do?
What one has to do is know how to properly conduct oneself in the business and social arenas, being able to make polite conversation, know how to introduce people properly, whether in this country or other countries. Being able to dine without embarrassing oneself or anyone else at the table, which means knowing how to hold a knife and fork, and the niceties of eating with your mouth closed, knowing how to use your napkin.
Knowing which direction the styrofoam container of the Big Mac needs to be opened. Is it to the left or to the right?
We didn't deal with Big Macs.
They do now. The latest version, the 2016 iteration.
Let's say you're having, the Hanukkah feast, dinner, or any of your holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas for me, when you have 20 people at the table, yes, knowing how to pass everything, if they pass in the right direction, you have to, you know, run into each other.
I have to say, I'm sitting up much straighter than usual since you got on the phone. Like, I'm really trying right now.
I'm so happy I have that effect on people.
I know, just hearing your voice, I'm just like, wait, am I doing everything right? So I imagine manners and etiquette have never been more important. And I want to say, like, lacking from the younger generations for whom cell phones and you know, constant distractions are pretty common. What is the worst offense you've seen lately from, you know, young people? Like, what's the thing that you're seeing most often?
I would say that and this kind of involves everything they do, that they're almost mindless of others.
Like walking down the street, holding a cell phone, not even realizing who they're walking into type of thing.
Right, right. And being just so, I hate to say egocentric because they're not all that way, but it's definitely a less empathic and more narcissistic generation. So in everything they do, even in conversation, not making eye contact with another person, which is how we show respect and show that we're listening to them, is something they have trouble doing. Like you said, walking down the street with their cell phone and you know, not realizing that people are trying to pass them, as well as doing that when they're sitting with another person, texting.
So when you teach classes at the Etiquette School, do you ever have, how do you work with young people on those things?
You know, the rules of etiquette they do evolve to adapt to the times, but what does not evolve is basic manners. And that's treating people with kindness, consideration, and respect.
So I teach college freshmen, and here's a question that comes up a lot. They always want to know what to call me. And I actually don't mind.
They want to know what?
They want to know what to call me. Should they call me professor? Should they call me doctor? Should they call me mister? Should they call me hey you? And
right.
It has occurred to me that at different schools and places, there are different there are different protocols for that, right? I mean, there are now companies where every day is casual Friday and where you call the CEO Mark or Sergey or Bob or whatever. Mm-hmm. And do you have a preference, or is it just that titles should reflect whatever the person wants to be called? Is there anything beyond just you want to make the person feel comfortable?
Well, number one, you should call a person what they want to be called by. And I would think that at the beginning of each semester, you would introduce yourself the way you'd like to be addressed by the student.
I did. Oh, good. I did the right thing.
Yeah. Okay. And I would say that many schools are on a first-name basis. I mean, the teachers are on a first-name basis. And I always ask the students, at your school, do you call your teachers by their first names or by their last names? The problem comes, especially in college, when they're used to calling their professors, their teachers by their first names. They get out into the real world, and they think that everyone they meet when they're interviewing or when they start working is going to be on a first name basis, and that's not the case. So it's almost doing them a disservice by being so casual. Unless, of course, we tell them that when you get out of school, always address someone you meet for the first time, especially when you're interviewing, if it's someone older, by their title, whether it's Mr., Ms. for women in business, or doctor. When someone's a doctor, they should always be addressed as a doctor. That should be their honorific.
When I got to college, I realized that my whole life had been calling my friends' parents by their first names. I went to school in the South, grew up outside New York. And all my friends called their parents like Mr. and Mrs. And I was so surprised, and it sounded so nice. Is that?
Well, I always called my best friend's mother always by her last name. And in fact, when I, you know, saw her when I was much older, it was still hard for me to call her by her first name because I had always called her Mrs. Flanagan and not Janice. You know, it depends on where you grow up. Outside the United States, many cultures, many countries, especially in Europe, you would never call an adult by their first name. A young person wouldn't. And also, even in the workforce, they would always address their superiors, senior executives, by their titles, Mr., Ms., and never first name.
But, you know, some of these things, as you say, are cultural in the other direction, right? There are cultures that are more polite. There are also cultures, we might say, as a Jewish podcast, in which if you fly the national airlines of certain Jewishly populated countries, there's a lot more pushing and shoving. Some would say that
it's impolite not to push and shove.
Right. I mean, if you fly LL, there are certain communities, there are neighborhoods in Brooklyn where there's a little more brusqueness than elsewhere. Does it become okay by virtue of the fact that those are the norms of the neighborhood or the airline?
Well, within reason.
Clearly, you've never flown LL before.
That's a trick. tricky question. I do know. Here's what I advise I work with many business people, and I say ignorance is not an excuse when you go to another country. In other words, you have to study their culture a bit before you go, because you don't even know when you're making a mistake or insulting them or embarrassing yourself. So you have to learn a little bit about their culture. I think even in China, they like to push. They don't wait online. They don't queue up like we do here.
When you see a gross, just sort of something really uncouth or really impolite happening, what's the proper response to it? Because you obviously can't, tell someone who's not in a class of yours. Like, how do you deal with that?
That's exactly, you said it exactly. To put it bluntly, unless someone's paying me to correct them and to teach them good manners and etiquette, it would be more rude of me to correct them than for the behavior they're exhibiting.
Could anyone be corrected, or do you believe that there are some people who are beyond help?
I'd like to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. See, I think probably it's either ignorance, which meaning they were never taught, and that's the thing, too. It's an indication of one's background, one's socioeconomic background. And it doesn't mean you have to have money to have good manners. That has nothing to do with it. Because as we know, a lot of people with money don't have good manners. So,
tell us about it. Ms. Fitzpatrick, this has been enlightening. Before we take our leave of you, you have before you a panel of Jewish experts certified. As you've been certified in protocol, we've been certified
by the Elders of Zion.
By the Elders of Zion in the dispersing of Jewish wisdom. Do you have any questions for us about Judaism or Jewish culture that we could help you with?
Yes, I did have a question. I haven't often been to a synagogue, but every now and then there's an opportunity, and I want to know how a non-Jewish person should conduct oneself.
Well, first of all, I think most American Jews also haven't really been to a synagogue ever, so you're in very good company. I would say that the rule for that should probably be the same principle that applies in the popular spinning class Soul Cycle. if you're one of the true believers, you sit in the front row and you do everything the instructor says. If you're like me and you're a pathetic, middle-aged, overweight man, you just sit all the way in the back. You clearly don't belong here. You can enjoy the music and you could sort of do some of the motions, but you're clearly not of here. I think that's more or less the case. Just don't get too close. Just don't do anything that seems too, involved.
So be seen and not heard.
I mean, I've gone to services with my non-Jewish friends a lot, and I find it really an interesting experiment to sort of figure out how to be comfortable in that environment and also not to do anything that you're not supposed to do, like, not going up for Mass or, for communion.
Don't take communion.
Yeah, like the
don't
big,
confess.
The big ones.
Right. Uh-huh.
If you're in sort of like an egalitarian, reformer, conservative, not the super religious stuff, which I think you would sort of stick out a little more, even if you weren't of that level of observance, not even if you're Jewish or not. I think in sort of the less religious temples and synagogues, I think you'd get away with just sort of like sitting quietly, trying to having the book open, trying to keep up with where everyone is. They usually say what page you're on, so you can sort of stay on top of it. You don't have to know all the words to all the songs, obviously. And I think a lot of, if anyone who doesn't go every week won't know all the words to all the songs. But I think it's a pretty welcoming place for someone who isn't Jewish, I would say.
Also, Ms. Fitzpatrick, I think we would have no problem picking you up as the non-Jew, because you would be the only person in synagogue not talking during services.
I'm actually going to give you some real helpful hints, some real nitty-gritty, the kind of things that you teach, like at your adult dining class, where people want to know how exactly do we do this, right? So number one, don't eat first, because there are – I'm just thinking of what some Gentile friends of mine have gotten wrong, right? You don't eat until after certain prayers have been said. So don't ever eat first, even if you are the first in line and it all seems, all set. Just wait. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you can never go wrong wearing a hat. If you're in a really religious synagogue, it will be expected of you, but it won't be held against you anywhere. So time to bust out the hat. And number three, the correct response when someone says Shabbat Shalom is to repeat the exact same thing back at them. So they say Shabbat Shalom, you say Shabbat Shalom. That one has driven Gentile friends around the bend. Someone says Shabbat Shalom to them, they assume it's like Assalamu Alaikum Wa Alaikum Salam. They think there's some like non-equivalent or different rejoinder. It's just repeat it back to them.
Mark, that
nod.
Is such great Jewish wisdom. That's true of everything else any Jew ever says to you. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? That's right. Ms. Fitzpatrick, thank you so much for being our Gentile of the Week. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh,
and
you're welcome.
We would encourage people to sign up for your classes, which are held regularly in New York City, yes?
Yes, they are.
All right. What's your website? Do you have a website?
I do. It's etiquette-ny.com.
All right. We're all going to go there because we surely need it. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure.
Okay.
We are excited to announce Tablet's first ever essay competition, First Personal. Our editors are looking for previously unpublished work by writers living in North America who have never written for Tablet before. They are seeking submissions on the theme of belonging. Where do you feel at home or no longer at home, physically, spiritually, or culturally? How do you find community or a sense that you're a part of something larger than yourself? Are there places where you feel a sense of belonging or alienation or both? Tablet is seeking personal essays about your life and your experiences and how your thoughts and feelings have evolved over time. Tablet editors will review all submissions and choose their favorite five, which they will edit with the writers. The authors of those five pieces will be brought to New York City to read their story in front of a live audience. A guest judge will then select the winner. The winning essay will be published in Tablet and the winner will receive $500. For more information and to submit your essay, please visit tabletmag.com/essay contest.
A little more from the mailbox. A lot of our readers were intrigued by our discussion with Thomas Chatterton Williams about whether or not Jews are white. Some of them took it really, really literally, and they wrote to us and they were like, take a look at yourselves. You're very white, or you're pink, or you're peach. Here's a few of the responses. Robert Marcus wrote in, Semites are probably Caucasian, but our DNA has been corrupted by rapes, miscegenation, and assimilation. New? Like Joseph's coat, out of many subtle hues, from fairest rose to ebony, all in splendid harmony. Aesthetic justice you must pursue. Slightly rambling.
Liam Hemsworth said that.
But entirely welcome one. Somebody sent us a kind of poem. It's like a sort of, I don't know, it's sort of haiku-like, but longer. He writes, Dear Unorthodox, are all Christians white? Are all Muslims people of color? Are all Asians Buddhists? Jews come in different races, etc. Yours, Gloria Klein. Thanks, Gloria. And then on a totally different note, we got this lovely letter. Hi, Unorthodox. I'm a 20-year-old college student in Chicago. I was living in Chicago's Lakeview neighborhood. Lots of shuls and Jews and kosher food. I was keeping Shabbat, studying Talmud and Torah a few nights a week, running shit at Hillel and interning at the Federation. Then I unexpectedly had to return home to rural Virginia for the summer, where there's less than 40 Jewish families in a county of nearly 70,000 people. Your podcast meant so much to me this summer. I would listen occasionally throughout the school year, but I didn't realize how much it meant to me until I was out here in bumfuck nowhere for 3 months. The humor, news, running jokes, quirks, and overall Jewishness of the podcast made me feel like I was still part of the Jewish people, even though I felt so removed from my community back in Lakeview. I look forward to it every Friday, and I can truly say it was one of the things that helped me stay afloat during a difficult summer. Thank you, Liel, Stephanie, and Mark. Thank you so, so much. Yours, Abby Seitz. I just want to say, when I was reading this, I thought, I wonder if you're offending all of your neighbors in East Bumfuck Gentile Land. And then I realized they're not listening to the podcast. So you're totally
fine. So screw them.
So screw them.
Fuck you, people, rural Virginia. We got nothing to do with you. Nothing. You hear?
You go just vote for Governor Kane. Mazel tovs of the week?
I don't have a mazel tov, but I do have a farewell. A children's book author whose work I greatly liked died at a very young age this week, Anna Dudney, whose name I hope I'm pronouncing correctly. And if you have small children, and if you've ever read to them the Llama Llama series, which she had written, I think you could feel the presence of a great spirit, the presence of great joy, and may her memory be a blessing.
Amen to that. Anna Dudney was, and she died at, what, 52 or something?
50.
Ugh. Just horrible.
Brain tumor.
Stephanie?
I have a welcome to the world to my cousin's baby, the first of the next generation of Butniks, Elizabeth Liliana Butnik. She is really, really cute and really awesome, and I'm so excited. And it's like one of those like generation-to-generation things. I feel it. I feel that way.
Le dor va dor.
Yeah.
In the words of the great Katy Perry, may the Butniks go forth and multiply.
And my mazel tov is to my sister Rachel on her 28th birthday. Happy birthday, baby sister. And also to daughter Rebecca, who had her first assist in her first game of soccer ever. She started playing soccer this week with a terrific little under 12 team in New Haven, and she had a fun time on the first day. Of course,
called
I don't let her
the,
listen to
the
this.
New Haven Crushers, the New Haven. Well,
funny you should ask. They don't have a team name. And somebody on the team wanted them to be like the New Haven Spider-Men. And that was vetoed. And it's an ongoing negotiation. Right now, they're just New Haven under 12. So
the under 12s.
We'll see. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine on the web at tabletmag.com. It is edited by Shoshi Shmulevitz and produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Tolushkin. Rabbinic supervision by Nancy Geiger, Robin Winning, Jane Lippo, Elizabeth Lowe, Annette Shirok, Stan Levinson, Sharon Litwin, and Atara Margolis, who all gave generously to our show. We are so, so grateful, but we wonder, why did no men give us money this week? Why is it all female donors? What's going on?
It's directed to the Leah Leibovitz Fund.
That's right.
Men, you have some mansplanation to do.
That's right. Meanwhile, the women just want to pay you to read hummus recipes in your hot accent. Kosher slaughtering this week is by WikiLeaks, of course. Follow Tablet on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at Tablet Mag. Our music is by Golem, and we record at the plush Argo Studios in New York City. Shalom, friends.